Paul Marsh on Express FM. Delighted to be joined in the studio by Gemma Hammond. Gemma, welcome to Express FM. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me here, Paul.
So let's kind of go right back, not too far back, hopefully, but let's go right back. And what made you really fall in love with food and want to become a chef and get into catering and everything else like that?
Okay, so I grew up around foods a lot. My dad used to import and export fruit and vegetables. He worked at the New Covent Garden Market a lot and then later at the Western International Market. So I spent a lot of time hiding myself in his boot and going to market in the middle of the night with him when I should have been at school. That was quite good fun. My aunties and uncles, they all had a huge interest in food. My auntie Molly, she's a cake decorator, and my auntie Mickey, she was a chef. So I spent a lot of time around food, and my dad loved to eat as well. So
don't we all?
Yeah, I do too. I was quite a fussy eater when I was younger as well. My stepmother used to feed us all greasy mince, and you could smell it in the house when you came home from school. And I was like, oh my goodness. And so I think I taught myself to cook, and then I had a job as a washer-upper, and it just all fell into place for me. Really, I just found I was good at it. My boss then paid for me to go to college, and it all went from there, really. And obviously, you can learn a lot from being a chef. You develop your lateral thinking skills, and you really can put your mind to most things, which is quite good. It's been really valuable to me in my life.
So what was the next step after that, after college and learning and everything? How did you actually sort of become employed?
Okay, I went to university, actually. I worked at that little pub for 7 years, where I was the second chef there. And then I went to university because I was trying to get jobs further up in the industry. And they were saying I didn't have any experience. So I thought, well, I'll go and learn a little bit. So I went to university as an adult student at the University of Surrey. That was quite good fun, I have to say. But after having done that, all that paperwork and all that math management, accounting and such, I didn't really feel it was for me. And so I went straight back into the kitchen when I finished there. And I'd worked for a company in London doing canapé events, big weddings and banquets in the Guildhall and such. And then I went to work for a company called the Global Infusion Group. They have a division of their company called Eat to the Beat. And they provide catering for festivals and tours and backstage catering, basically, for loads of events like Glastonbury and such.
That must have been a hell of a shift, moving from, you know, weddings and quite, you know, uppity sort of to-dos and things like that to going backstage and going on tour and everything else like that.
It was a massive eye-opener. And my friend, Rebecca, she used to work in the film industry doing location catering. So I knew it existed. However, I'd never put myself in there.
Yeah.
And when I sort of dived into that, I thought, whoa, this is amazing. And so I did lots and lots of backstage catering and tours with various bands. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Brag away.
I did a Jules Holland tour. I've toured with Britney Spears. I toured with the Iron Maiden 3 times with Faithless. You know, Pet Shop Boys last year, and I did the Glastonbury Pyramid stage as well. So I got to feed Herbie Hancock and lots of really wicked people. So that was amazing. So it's really, really good. You get to travel a lot. And because you also work with an awful lot of different chefs, you learn an awful lot of things. And because you're also shoved into essentially a tent in a field, and there's all sorts of things that go wrong. You have to learn how to do power, water, electrics, you know, all that kind of stuff. You've got to be really on your toes with that. So it's really good fun, and that's taught me a lot, and I have a lot to be thankful for, I think.
Now, obviously you would have gone out and catered for many, many musicians. Were there any musicians that taught you anything?
Yes, there were, yes. So when I was on tour with Jules Holland, a fantastic tour. It was the Rhythm and Blues Orchestra, brilliant bands, and excellent guests. And one day he had guests coming, and we were at the Royal Albert Hall, and they were Rico Rodriguez, Ruby Turner, and Jimmy Cliff. So
the Jimmy Cliff.
Yes, the Jimmy Cliff, the legend Jimmy Cliff. So I'd never cooked Caribbean food before this time, and we were staying in the around the Albert Hall anyway. So I thought, I know, I'm going to go to Brixton. I was born in Brixton. So I was like, let's go down there, chat to a few people, go and see my friend Lincoln, get some advice and look up on the internet and learn how to do some stuff. So I got everything that I needed, did that, had a really wicked day. Then I went back the next day to the Albert Hall with all of my things, cooked this Caribbean feast to put into their green room. That was lovely. I was really happy with most of the dishes, apart from the rice and peas, which I was not happy about at all. I knew it was wrong, but they'd already seen the menu, so I had to put the dish in there. So I put it in there and ran away. And I was really, really embarrassed about that one. And at the end, they came and called me into their green room and thanked me for such a wonderful feast and asked me where I cooked Caribbean food like that. And I said I'd only just learned. And they said it was wonderful. My saltfish fritters were amazing. But there was one thing that was wrong. And I was like, yeah, I know, the rice and peas. And I was like, it was terrible, but I didn't know what to do and it went terribly wrong. And so Jimmy Clift jumped up and said, that's all right, let's go into the kitchen. And he went into the kitchen with me and taught me how to cook rice and peas. So, yeah, that was one of the most amazing days of my life, really.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I mean, yeah, like you say, of all the box-ticking exercises and all the, you know, the bucket list things, Jimmy Clift teaching you how to cook rice and peas.
Yeah, amazing.
So talking of some of the other acts that you have been on tour with, you know, what are the sort of the groups that you really connected with? What are the groups that really you learnt something with?
Gosh, now there's a question. So Faithless was a really good tour. We had a lot of fun together there. They liked to party. So there was always lots going on with that tour there. I think that you learn and you grow with a lot of tours. And I'm not sure which band I'd say that I've particularly.
Well, obviously, did you say you toured with Iron Maiden 3 times?
Yes.
I'd say that obviously there was something there, wasn't there?
Yeah. I guess they were really quite nice chaps, really. They just like simple food, meat and 2 veg, you know, roast dinners
really?
And all that kind of stuff. It's the crew that you have to worry about when you're on tour most of the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you've got a whole 60-odd geezers or blokes wearing swag and shorts always. And so... You know, they're well-travelled and well-eaten people, so they obviously just need to have something that's really, really nice and interesting, but also a little bit home-cooked, you know.
Would it be the same thing that you cooked one thing for everybody?
Most of the time, if you're clever and you do your menu properly without all the extra additives and stuff like that, you can manage to satisfy most people with one menu. You can put some extra bits and pieces with tweaks and embellishments, you know, for some special people or add additional things. But most of the time, we try to keep it across the board. Some bands like to have their own personal chef away from the others. Then that's fine. I've never had one of those. They've always been happy to come into the dining room and eat all of the food. And chat with me, you know, personally, and thank me every day for the food.
How does that feel? Because obviously, as we go through life we do different things, you get that buzz from various different things throughout your life. And I'm sure right now, when you've had a great evening at Pollito Loco, you have that buzz. But then I'd imagine cooking on tour or backstage at Glastonbury, etc., and you get the compliments from, you know, a certain celebrity or a certain artist or whatever, and you get that kind of a buzz.
Yeah, so, it's lovely. I think also, I'm not a person that's, like, well into worshipping lots of different people very much anyway, so I tend to treat people like they're normal human beings. Sometimes I don't even know who they are. And so that's quite embarrassing.
I've well been guilty of that.
And I was recently, we did a charity event for the NHS, I think, and there was a gentleman, in really nice Nike purple trainers, and purple is my favourite colour, and they were like high tops, and I really wanted a pair, and I've been looking at this pair in turquoise, and I was like, went over and started chatting to him and was like, you know, where did you get those, blah, blah, blah. And it was only, I didn't even notice it was David Gray. But
wow.
Someone else had said to me, oh, well, that was David Gray you were talking to. I was like, really?
I liked his trainers.
Yeah, yeah, lovely trainers on.
So let's stay with the music for a second. Obviously, you've done some amazing tours with amazing bands and amazing people. Backstage Glastonbury at the Pyramid stage.
Yes.
Obviously, catering for lots of people who I'm assuming probably haven't put their requests in. Or did some people put requests in?
No, well, you... Again, when you're planning menus for events and stuff like that, you have to make sure that you're covering every base. It's much easier like that. So you mostly cover every bases, and people do put personal riders in for their dressing rooms and such like that. So we had a girl, Kylie, she did all the riders for the dressing rooms, and they go in there. And Paul McCartney, for example, wanted his own personal chef, so he was provided his own personal chef as well. So I was just working with the group that were doing the for the main crew and stuff like that. But we did have coming in, Herbie Hancock came in, obviously. That was good. I had a chat with him. Woody Harrelson was there as well.
Okay.
So apparently Greta Thunberg came in, but I didn't see her. And the gentleman, I can't remember his name, you're going to have to help me, the gentleman who designed the cover for the Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band album.
Yeah, I know exactly who you mean, but the name escapes me, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to. Sorry, apologies, but he was a true gentleman as well. So, yeah, it's a much different experience when you're doing that because it's so big as well.
Yeah,
so
it's huge.
Yeah, you are more cordoned off from the dressing rooms of those kinds of festivals. It's not as fun as it sounds.
Well, I was going to ask you because obviously we at Express FM, we go and do Victorious and various other bits and pieces as well. So I do know that going to a festival is not always as fun as it sounds. But did you get to experience any of Glastonbury or did you just purely go there and work?
No, I went to see, I saw a bit of the Pet Shop Boys, of course. I did see a bit of Paul McCartney as well. So, but again, you're so tired. You're doing breakfast, lunch and dinner. And then at the end of, we stay in something called a bunker bin. It's like a little porter cabin with three bunks in it. And it's down the end of our bunker bin alley. It was a drum and bass club. It went on till 4 o'clock in the morning. It was
No way! That's just what you need, isn't it?
Yeah, so that wasn't much fun. So, you know, you had to sort of like try and be sensible. Yeah,
but what time did you stop cooking? You know, did people want food up until 2 a.m., 3 a.m. or?
Okay, in our tent, because it was the artist's tent, thankfully we didn't have to do breakfast.
Right.
So we started at around 8 or 9 anyway, because we had to prep for lunch.
Yes.
So we prepped all the way through. You start at 12 and you carry on the dinner, a rolling service, sometimes changing the dishes throughout the day. You know, we had a range of different dishes to suit everybody, of course. And two massive dessert stations and salad stations and things like that. And then, yeah, you served at about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And then there were other things that we put out when obviously we go home.
Sausage rolls.
Not quite.
Cheese twists.
Well, sometimes, yeah. Sometimes. Iron Maiden would love them.
Okay, so moving away from the music side of things, which obviously is absolutely fascinating, let's get back to Pollito Loco. Now, obviously, you know, you have only started. You started in December, was it?
That's correct.
Yeah, it started in December. So it is still in its infancy. But whilst, you know, your business is in its infancy, you have got big plans for it and you do want to go on and do great things.
Yeah, that's right. So that's another maybe place where the crazy little chicken came from, because everyone keeps telling me I'm crazy all the time, because I think it's really necessary for all individuals to participate in their environment, to try to make things better, to do good things, you know, and to try to improve the world in which we live in. You know, lots of people don't think that they can make changes, or, oh, what I do won't make any difference, and so they'll carry on with the same behaviours. But that's absolutely not true. Obviously, little ripples make things happen, and in order to change the world, one has to start with where one lives. I heard that on Call the Midwife. My favourite programme.
Absolutely superb. So not the Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
You can't put it down.
Sister Monica Jones.
Yeah, it's not in the Bible or anything else like that. It was in Call the Midwife. Yes. Fantastic.
Okay, she might have taken it from somewhere else, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so getting back to it. So, I mean, Pollito Loco started as just a chicken business, really. And then I did lots of research. So I'm interested in the effect that we have. And having been a chef for so many years and seen an incredible amount of waste, incredible amount of plastic packaging, incredible amount of really crap sauces and foods and things like that, which people eat. You know, we need to have a better diet. We need to eat more natural food. We need to eat more vegetables if we're going to allow our body to perform properly, and then our mental capacity to be good as well, in order for us to learn as children and to have a nice life, basically, less strain on our bodies, etc. In turn, if we were all to do that, then we'd have less problems with obesity, less problems and less strain on the NHS system, less, you know, people smoking or whatever, and there'd be more inclusion in the society, I think that we've lost quite a lot within our society. So I wanted to then develop that chicken idea into something that was going to help and benefit and maybe create awareness and collaborate with people and build something within a social environment or community to help people understand and to show them that actually it's farming, being together, you know, doing this hard work is good and valuable and enriches us as people.
So you're looking to potentially take it out on the road?
That's correct, yes.
How are we going with that?
Okay, so we are going to film, getting ready for our crowdfunder project.
Okay.
Which we hope to launch in the next couple of weeks. We have been gifted a Renault Mascot minibus. It's a really big kind of tank of a thing, so it's really sturdy, it's perfect, it's square inside, it's easy to kit out for a food truck. But I've spent so much getting all the dark kitchen and everything like that ready and getting the business to where it is so far. I'm going to need a crowdfund for that, so we're going to be doing that. And Portsmouth City Council do a match fund. So if we're successful, Portsmouth City Council will themselves stump up $5,000 as well.
Wow.
So we're hoping to do really well with that. And also in itself, we're hoping to create awareness with that as well. And we're going to be able to take our food truck around to different street markets, to different schools, to different places, to teach people and to, you know, build on that community.
So as well as taking it out on the road, which obviously hopefully you will be doing very soon, but the other thing that you are looking to do, obviously, is give back to up-and-coming chefs, because obviously you were taught a certain way and only a certain way, and then you discovered that there was this whole big wide world out there and so many other different ways that you can actually, you know, cater for people. So you want to give back with that as well.
Exactly. I have been a teacher and an assessor of chef students and of apprentices most recently at a local college as well. And I really love working with young people. There are so many young people that enter into our industry and then sort of like drop it off because they think it's unsociable, it's not fun, or they get treated not very well. When I was taught to be a chef by my lifelong mentor and my first boss, Chris, who used to own the King William IV in Mickleham, they nurtured me. They were my second family, and that's how I feel. The kids aren't being given that in college these days. There's quite a lot of paperwork going on there, obviously, they don't get the attention. And when they come to the college, traditionally old-fashioned chefs, they're very regimental. You know, it's either do that or get out, be on time or get out. And that doesn't necessarily work for the youth of today. And I think it's really important to actually, you're supposed to facilitate the students' learning and you're supposed to help them grow and show them how to do these things for themselves. And that's what I said to you about the developing the lateral thinking. That's what it's doing. But so many people are leaving our industry. So many people are not willing to invest in that environment. They don't want to go into an environment where they're going to get told off and shouted at all the time in a hot kitchen, you know, where it's stressful anyway. You don't want to be doing that, you know, on a Friday or Saturday night.
No, it's probably not high on people's want-to-do list, is it?
No, exactly. But there are so many... That's in a traditional restaurant, and I think that we need to show students and young people that there are so many avenues to getting into hotel and catering and being a chef. You can do... you can go on a cruise ship, you can go on a restaurant, a hotel, you can also go to street food, you can go to markets, you can go and do what I did, backstage catering, you can do location catering, you can do pop-ups. So it really is so many, bases that you can cover. And I think also with the teaching of the actual topic, you can teach history, geography, as well as the key skills, maths and English, and you can really create an inclusive society. For example, in schools, we're supposed to do British values and all of those kinds of things, which is great. However, it's not represented properly in the learning, whereas actually the topic of food, it can really help to create that inclusion and to accept all cultural diversity.
Thank you for talking to us, Gemma. If the people want to know a little bit more about Pollito Loco, they want to order some of your phenomenally delicious food, where can they do all of this?
Okay, so you can visit our website, which is www.pollitoloco.com, or you can give us a call on 07460069278. You can also find our menu on Uber Eats, Just Eat and Deliveroo, but I'd advise ordering direct for collection. you can either pop in and collect from us, or we will soon be getting a moped and we'll be able to deliver to you as well. You can also see us on Instagram at crazy little_chicken and Facebook as well at Pollito Loco.